Hello, welcome. This is Melinda. Thank you for joining us on SexGen, either via podcast through your ears or on our YouTube channel visually. So thank you very much. I know, right? I have to do that little stance. This is part two with Lee, non-binary. My pronouns, she, her.
Mine, they, them.
Okay. And we are super excited about having you here. And I'm excited to kind of start this story. And we did it again. We started talking before the podcast. And now I'm like, no, that's part of the story.
Yeah. We could talk forever. That's because like the conversation naturally flows. But then I think there's lots of things that are relevant to what we were talking about. We were talking about your work environment. We were talking about things that are personal to you. But then it's funny how things overlap. I can't remember what we talked about last week. Like, it's okay. So I don't know what we're up to this week.
So what we're going to be up to today is that we did a little bit of the family background and that dynamic and that's an ongoing, right? Like your journey is ongoing.
Sure is.
It's not fixed. It's not you explained your pronouns and the name that you have and not for acceptance because there's nothing to accept, you know, your worthiness is there.
Just a statement of facts.
But supportive and to understand the facts and, you know, those kind of things are all things that are possibilities and that become kind of delightful whenever you get to see the change in others and whenever they recognize the change in you. And like that you're more comfortable, you know, that you have more expression or that you have, you know, all these different.
Yeah, it's funny because people often say like they will try and be nice, won't they, by saying things about your appearance. Sometimes people say, have you lost weight or have you done something to your hair? a lot of the times they're describing a changing energy. They don't understand what it is that they're describing. So my stepmother said it to me a couple of days ago. And I'm pretty damn certain I haven't lost weight because I like food too much and I don't like exercise anymore because it hurts now. So,
word.
but she said, you're looking really good lately. And I wanted to say it's the love of a good woman, but I didn't want to do that at the same time because I don't want questions from my parents about my sex life.
You're like, this is something that I think I'll just take the good energy going on.
she meant it in a positive light, given what else was going on. And she actually corrected herself for the first time in my presence.
That's so cool.
I had to play it cool. And just pretend to carry on the conversation like she hadn't said anything, because that is what my instructions were. And that's what she did. She said dead name, awesome. Sorry, oops, sorry, Lee, and then carried on the conversation. And I was like,
yay!
A round of applause for you. Not even my mother's, my stepmother's, like somebody that I've had to grow a relationship with. So it was even bigger than it being.
Oh, yes.
You know, a parent as such, because this is not a relationship either of us ever wanted to have with each other. Thanks very much. But we had no choice about it.
And so it's neat to see whenever y'all can, respect each other as humans and not project a whole bunch of junk.
I'm nicely surprised. Yeah, I was really nicely surprised because she's a boomer. My parents are boomers. And for all the labels and whatever, it does basically generationally mean it is different for them. Like, you know, so things like sexuality, you know, they weren't expecting a gay child.
Yep.
They didn't plan for it. So it was a surprise at first. Yeah. And it took some time for them to adjust to it and realize there wasn't anything to actually adjust to because I'm not sleeping with them. So it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Change our relationship at all.
At all. I said that because it's so beautiful. At all. I'm gonna start talking like you because we talked.
Oh, don't do it.
It's so beautiful.
Don't do it. You are not Dick Van Dyke. You won't sound right.
I know.
Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins. God help me.
Hobbins.
Absolutely rubbish.
Okay. But yeah.
So yeah, it's a family. The family. The family are adjusting to their own new reality of having had years of calling me one name and now have to change to another. Other than that, it hasn't changed for them. I don't know that I've changed. I know I've changed. I know that I'm being free of a burden like that, of a secret that you absolutely believe fundamentally was dangerous to say out loud because mm-hmm. of your safety, but also your mental health, to be accused because I'm a mental health patient, to have that put onto you as well. So there's lots of stigma reasons for staying closeted for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And so equally, I can give them grace for coming to, you know, I've lived with it for 30 years as a secret. They're just finding out now. So I have to remember that it's not all going to happen on my timetable.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Because it, as much as this is about me, it's also about the fact that these relationships are long-term relationships. These are not throwaway relationships. These are not, oh, well, we disagree on that and that's the end of it. No, we have to find a way forward, like whatever that is.
That's what a lot of the kids get so confused about, because they think, okay, well, then we just can't have a relationship. And it's like, I just feel like there's a middle ground somewhere, you know, there's a middle ground somewhere.
If you can get to the core of what each individual needs, is wanting from that other person in that relationship, mm-hmm. whether they're able to provide that or not is irrelevant.
But yeah, no, that's not what I'm talking about.
What it is that they want from that relationship. So, and that's where I'm at with my father, at least, is understanding that we want the same thing out of this relationship. We want to understand. We don't want to fight. We don't want to be enemies. We don't want to be against each other. And he doesn't fundamentally disagree with anything that I'm doing with my life. Mm-hmm. But it's an adjustment and a time thing. So I have to give him the grace to get it wrong. And I have to give him the grace to still be ignorantly, age appropriately homophobic and transphobic around me is the way I'm going to put it, the most kindly way, because I love my father. Mm-hmm. But in private, things that pass as jokes or that get laughed off have hurt me my whole life. And when you express to a parent that something they're doing hurts you, but it's in their space that you're telling them that, so you have to be respectful of the fact that they're going to come back and say, first of all, laugh, either in embarrassment at being pulled up on something you morally know is wrong by a child of your own, or second of all, it's the indignation of correcting somebody in their own home, which I can totally understand, disrespectful to a lot of people. that's the bit that's the worst part for me. That's the thing that's out of everything that I'm trying to do at the same time, including today, another step, as you know, at work, I had an interaction with a colleague that I wasn't expecting, where he emailed me off his own back after the meeting and asked me my preferred name and pronouns. Literally two sentences just made my entire week.
Yep.
I give him the grace of having that, having had years of that being acceptable, but I won't stop pulling him up no matter how uncomfortable it makes us. And it ruined a perfectly good day the other day. We had a perfectly good interaction and it ruined it because I couldn't let it go. And my stepmom backed me up, but then it was kind of like, well, what are we going to do with the old bugger, you know? It's kind of like
one step forward, and then it's like, okay, we acknowledge, so let's go this way now.
Certain age allowed to get away with stuff just because they're old dogs? You can train an old dog to do a new trick.
Yes.
If the reward is big enough. And what I'm trying to communicate is my happiness is your reward. Is why isn't that enough for you to do it?
I could not have said that any.
And I don't want to like put any emotions into it, because being born assigned female at birth and being so having periods and menstruation and having moods and having a mood disorder as well, mental illness. If I react with any kind of natural Mediterranean passion that's in my blood anyway, that's the first thing and the only thing people hear and see sometimes. So they're not listening to the actual words where I'm saying your things you say hurt me. Mm-hmm. Listen to me. Because when I said that to the children, when they were joking last Christmas about the pink birthday card that my dad had got me with Minnie Mouse on it, birthday, little girl. And they thought, this has been a family joke for a long time. As per usual, as society has trained them, the joke of the room should be the trans person. You're either, if you pay close attention, and I would advise anybody that wants to know anything about how trans people are and gay people are portrayed on TV and media to watch a Netflix documentary called Disclosure, where you will hear actual actors and actresses talking about how and making you realize and focus on just how we've been programmed to believe that trans women specifically are repulsive to a point where they will make men vomit. That particular image is in so many films, media, TV. It's come through into
Jim Carrey's expression was probably one of the
And he was a part of that. He did it in that movie. He did it in Ace Ventura, and it was over the top. And the point was, it's the over the topness of it. It's not even that it's repulsed. They're repulsed. It's that they are then violently sick. And there are other movies where the entire room will then just get everybody sick, and everybody because there is a trans person, regardless of what's between their legs, a trans woman is there. And that attitude actually is ingrained in society. And in this society and in my life, in my world, in my society, what that looked like in my family was that my constant butt against the binary of being female meant in my appearance and in my mannerisms and in the things that I did, my whole structure is not feminine. Mm-hmm. So them making jokes about how one day they're going to put me in a nice flowy dress and do my makeup and do my hair and my nails and watching me physically cringe is part of the entertainment, because then my flamboyant response or my jokey response or whatever would be the entertainment for, and that's been the norm for as long as I can remember. So asking the next generation, the children of my siblings, to not do that when they've been doing it up until this point. So the youngest, well, two of them don't live in this country, so they've never experienced it, so they really just know me as a picture on the Skype. But the youngest one that lives close to me is 10 now, so, and it's only this last Christmas I was able to actually approach the subject and say, listen, I know you get a terrible, terrible giggle out of this and you really do find it ecstatically funny. You have to understand that those jokes may really hurt my feelings, because I would never wear a dress, just like granddad would never wear a dress or the man next door would never wear a dress, because that's not for them. It's not for me either. So you joking about putting me in a dress really upsets me. And I said to her, it's a shame because you wear all boys and girls clothes. So you don't really understand that too much. And she said, no, but you never do makeup. I've never seen your nails done. You don't do anything with your jewelry or anything like girly stuff. You're not a proper girl, which is something that I've said a lot myself, reinforcing it to them, to say, this is my get out of jail free card for your jokes about me being not non-binary, is that I'll make a joke out of it too, And that had to stop. I had to put a stop to that this year. And I was able to have the conversation with the older ones. They didn't even need it, because they'd already progressed past teenage and past that point where they'd already recognised this is transphobic. We're not taking part. So they had backed off from those kind of jokes, and in their company they didn't happen. They were never instigated by them. It was always my sibling down. So my parents were the ones that carried it on. My dad, very, very, very much at the helm of driving that. But you see, this is where he would feel attacked, and where I would defend him and say that his sense of humour and his way of dealing with things that are different a lot of time is to make a joke out of it. And he's not, he would say, I don't discriminate against you. But what he doesn't understand, what he fails to see from my reality is microaggressions.
Yeah.
And he refutes them when they're pointed out frequently. So it's
really, so even if he's just done the action, how does he does a justification?
The justification is, it's just a joke. I don't mean it. You know, I'm not serious. You know, I love you. You know, I accept you. You know, I'm not homophobic. You know, I'm not transphobic. And then if you get any more,
those are transphobic actions.
Right. And that's where I say your words aren't matching.
Okay.
And I'm trying my best to just keep it up, because I want to jump down his throat and rage at him and just say, how can a man of your intelligence and professional prowess, which he's had in his psychoanalytical job when before he retired, have this kind of ingrained trans and homophobia, where you can sit in your living room when your wife comes in and tells you the neighbors are gay, you can announce and go, oh, yay, we've got gays next door, top of your voice. You can't say the gays. That's like saying the blacks. That completely dehumanizes that whole group of people.
Yeah.
To less than human. You know, the Jews, the gays, you can't do that. Like, it's just, and when I say that and I compare it to the Jewish community, he centers again and goes, well, you know, I'm only joking. Okay, fine. And like, it, you know, so he'll be corrected, but it's still a reflex for him to use comedy in that disrespectful, old-fashioned way, because that would get a great roar of laughter in pubs today. Any one of those homophobic or trans jokes would get a laugh from the male population in a pub, probably the women too, in this culture, in this country. Yeah, family dynamics around it is difficult and very complicated when you're coming up against generational stuff and societal stuff like that. It's battles that I didn't realize I would have to fight, you know, and
my clients don't. Those are the ones that they end up coming in for, because they're like, I didn't foresee this being the problem. Like,
right.
All the things, you know?
Right. Right.
The microaggressions and those kind of things.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Like, it's no longer acceptable. It never was, but it's especially now no longer acceptable. This is me saying to my family, for you to use these things as entertainment anymore. I won't have it anymore. I'm going to speak up now from now on. I won't be quiet anymore. And that's basically what I've basically hung my banner from my mast and said, you know, I don't give a flying fuck if you'd like me or not, or agree with what I'm doing. I'm an adult. But what I will tell you is, I'm announcing it's no longer acceptable for you to be transphobic in my company. And if I think you are being, I'm going to tell you. I don't care if you think you're not, because guess what? You don't get to gatekeep what's transphobic and what isn't.
Exactly.
I'm not even gatekeeping. All I can say is what feels wrong to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that you do have to speak up, because then if they don't know, then they're never going to be able to correct it. And your goal is to have a relationship that's more.
I think that they know. This is the problem, though. These are people that do know. These are not ignorant people. They do know what they're doing, because my stepmother corrected. She knows how to do this. It's just that because it's family, you get lazy with behavior, because they go, mm-hmm. Oh, you love me, you know, I'm only joking, you know, and that's how casual racism, sexism and homophobia and transphobia happens.
I see what you're saying. No. I see what you're saying. That makes sense. I was thinking to the aspect of that, you know, they are, you know, that it's something new to them, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a change to them, but it's
the first time that I tell someone, you know, like, hey, this is, did you know this is kind of where that story came from? Like, that's me saying, you know, and I won't, you know, I don't want that conversation around me, you know? And so no, that is the same. And it's not either they know or they don't know, you know, I do try to, you know, educate them on why, but I think for you, it's a little bit different because your family does have a lot of the knowledge.
Yeah. And they're intellectual enough to know that what they're doing is wrong. Whether I'm in the room or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's going to be pushback.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to get good with the big push, but at the same time, the pushback doesn't have to be the reason why you stop pushing. In fact, it's the reason why you don't. Because the more you continue, I guarantee it's just the same with bullies. The more you continue with the right path, sooner or later, we will overcome. Simple as that. Because that is the way of the universe. That is what happens eventually. It might take years and years and years. In every movement, we've seen progress because people are relentless. But yeah, it's an ongoing thing that you don't really think about. I didn't really plan it. I didn't really think about it too much in the sense of breaking down what would actually happen when I did start telling my truth to people. But one of the things I'm dealing with is fear, because I don't know. So I never planned for this. I always planned to take this to my grave, because I believed that it was just so wrong.
I'm so glad you didn't.
Yeah, I am too, because I don't know how much longer I really could have held that secret in. Because there's a lot of things that it impacts that you don't really pay much attention to when it's been around a long time. So, like, you know, being as this is sex gen, one of the things is you know, how it affects your sex life. Because there was one of the things that I was always really worried about was, like, whether or not women who love women would even find me attractive, because I don't identify as a female. So although I have very identifiable chest at the moment, once that's gone, that there isn't, other than the shape of my body, which is fairly athletic anyway, but I do have hips. Mm-hmm. And thighs, you know, that are feminine, and I'm not completely androgynous face looking, but that's one of the things you have to think about, is, like, you know, it, although being non-binary is not a sexuality, they go hand in hand,
but gender affects your sexuality.
Yes.
So this is how I say it. So they're gender, you kind of move around in this area, right? And then sexuality, you move around up above it, parallel. It's not perpendicular. One does not determine the other. But once you do find space that works together and you get attracted to someone, then you've got interaction of the two, you know, not determining, but interaction of the two.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that was a perfect, that's basically what I was getting to. Yeah, that's where I was going to go, was that's what you know, when you keep it secret, so I can't really talk too much about how it affects my sex life now, because I'm so newly out. So I can't really talk about how that affects me, other than to say that definitely last year, putting myself out there as someone who was single was a lot easier once I was settled in that I knew that I was Lee. And at first I wasn't, but once I was like, I know, and if I just back myself in that knowledge and just go forward and just put something out there in social media and in whatever, and just see what happens. Like, because my backup is always, I can always take it back.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not changing my name by law. I'm not marrying anyone. I'm not changing my body physically yet. So, you know, it wasn't an irreversible thing. But it built my confidence to the point where it was like, I was able to put myself out there and do, like, thirst traps and, like, show the sexuality that I have inside me freely without feeling shame. Because yeah, I'd always felt, up until last year, a lot of shame around my own sexuality. I'd never had the affirmation to understand that what I was legitimate, like, and not
very much so. Yeah.
Not an anomaly that was to be corrected or pushed into the box that fits good enough.
Yeah.
You don't have to fit in a box that's good enough.
Yep.
Which was, for me, which was masculine lesbian, which is what I've lived in for, you know, since I was, I suppose officially came out when I was 17 to my parents and my family. But anybody that knew me was like, yeah, and surprise. Well, they were somewhere, because I was very private because I was terrified of being gay bashed, because I had been gay bashed. And I was living in a very straight world. So I'd had beards, you know, I'd had boyfriends to, like, you know, throw people off. And it was still during that period of time before all this biphobia came up, which is very prevalent now, which I really hated. But where you could say you were bisexual and it was more acceptable than being gay, because it was almost like the patriarchy would accept you as being a bisexual woman because it still meant the men could get what they wanted. But when you come out as lesbians, like, you're saying no to the patriarchy, you're saying no to this, you're saying no to men. And that was the impression that I had.
Wow.
As a young
person. Okay.
So to pretend to like being with boys and being with a boy and just, yeah, just.
It provides sensation.
When I learned how to dissociate.
Yep.
Like, from my body, like, just like, because your body will mechanically do stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And, you know, yeah, your body can be present and your head not. No. And that's how a lot of people lived through those heteronormative situations, you know, until they could, like, figure out, like, why is this not ever getting better, you know, whether that be through multiple partners or through a partner that you stay with for a long time and it just doesn't change. Like, you can't be present physically in that situation. Or even if you can't be present physically, you can't be present physically and mentally, you know.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So it was like a double whammy for me, because I'm not trans guy, but I am in the wrong body in the sense that I'm not supposed to have a chest. In my brain, I'm not supposed to have a chest. Not the way that I am. And actually, I was looking at some children, some baby, not baby, like maybe the oldest one, I was maybe seven, in just looking at so young pictures, and I'm topless in all of them. There's a marked point in time where my clothing and my hair and everything changes all at once. There's this very marked, defined change in the photographs that are taken of me. And there's fewer of them, much, much fewer of them, once my chest came along. So there was always a lot of, but I thought that that was a freak thing as well, to, like, you know. To not want it.
Oh,
peers were all like, oh, I wish I had big boobs and the boys would really like me. And I'm like, you can have mine, girl. You can have them. I don't want them. It felt like such an injustice.
Definitely, you know, where society looks at you and says, oh, okay, we're in that female zone, you know, and for someone who does not fit in that area and to have to walk around like that 24/7.
I've always felt a fraud. I mean, but we've talked about this before, but like, I've always felt like a fraud because when I was in female only spaces, I felt like I wasn't supposed to be there and I wasn't welcome in the male only ones. So I was like, well, where the hell do I go then? Like, what? I never found that box. Right. I'm 40. I'm living my 46th year. I've got this far in my life with not finding that space.
So what are you finding now? I'm sorry. But I'm going to throw out this question before we both forget it, because we both do that.
We do.
What do you find now what are you building now in a community to support so that you don't have to jump into one of those binary boxes?
Yeah, it's interesting you ask that, because I feel like that came before the cart, came before the horse in that respect, accidentally. When I say accidentally, I always say it with a little bit of not really, because, and I don't want to be all hippy dippy and say it's the universe's plan, because I don't believe that any. Yeah, but I also don't believe that our plans are set in stone. I believe that they're always fluid, depending on which options and choices we decide to make in those moments. So we always have autonomy of choice and destination because of that choice. So there's an element of that, but there's also then an element of when I look back at where this wisdom comes from. Believe me, it's hard earned 4.5 decades worth. There are marked paths to that point where you're like, that I couldn't have got to that point without that.
Yeah.
And that's infuriating, because it's when people get confused with the meme about you having to have pain and trauma in order to be enlightened, because you have to have lived through that in order to get to the point of enlightenment. And there's a danger of believing, of kind of glorifying the survival of trauma in some respects, you know, like, yeah. It's something that creeps in a lot with people. And I, with my experience of certainly with being on social media, I was very much like, I had Facebook for like since 2013, and I got it then because I was depressed and I was on my own and I needed to find somebody to talk to, really, even if it was just someone commenting on memes in a group or something. Mm-hmm. And I never really connected with social media at all. And then I met somebody who changed my life completely in a wood shop one day, where I started doing this woodworking course. And then a year later, I got social media to track my course, because I was like, I'm really making progress with this. Not brilliant leaps and bounds, but it'd be great if I kept a record. One of the kids had said to me at the time, one of the kids would have been 13 and 14 at the time, just getting social media, and telling me that I needed to have Instagram because it was perfect way of showing off woodworking stuff, and, you know, lots of people do it, blah blah blah. So I did, and that led me to be more confident in the Facebook groups that I was in, led me to my ex-girlfriend, that led me to a long distance relationship, which led me to doing my online job because I had to work while I was visiting the States 2 or 3 times a year. So, and it was like, what if one of these things hadn't happened exactly how it happened, I would never have got onto that path. And I never would have ended up with the community that I had on Instagram when the pandemic hit. So yeah, I've been lucky. I've had people messaging me going, would you like me to call you Lee now? I know you haven't made an announcement. And I was like, yeah, should I make an announcement? I don't know. Should I do a post? You know, because when I first came out to my close group of friends, they were like, yay, let's have a party. I'm like, no, this isn't a celebratory time. I'm scared. What are you doing having a party? I don't want to have a party. I'm scared. Like, I've got all these questions and I don't understand, and there's no one guiding me, and I don't really, you know what to do with this, but I can't put it back in the box.
No, you know what? And all my clients do it different. They all do it different. And so we find out like what's the best case scenario for them. And it's not for them like what's best for everybody else. It's like literally what is best for you. Well, I don't really like to talk to people. Okay, then maybe a post is better. You know, you're probably going to get a lot of questions, a lot of comments, but then you can moderate it or an email, you know.
That's come up recently where I'm wondering, like, what have I denied myself by not having this truth known by my partner? Because that's all that was missing, was actually telling my partner this truth. I didn't tell my ex this at all.
But then that's where you have to navigate, you know, like just like you decide the boundaries, you know, like we talked about boundaries and walls, you know, at that time you might have needed walls, and, you know, cause, and so you didn't put up just boundaries. You didn't say, I'm going to move this boundary over here. And with this current partner, you may be like, you know what? I'm not going to go for the walls. Like, I'm really comfortable with the boundaries.
With this partner, it was just a case of, I've wanted to see if I could be 100% authentic instead of 90%, because I'd managed to get to 90% in all my other relationships, in friendships and everything. It was always 90% was my only, as far as I could go, because the last 10% was saying I'm Lee.
Yes.
And I couldn't say that. So to say it to a lover is a whole other different level for me, like, of existence, and it's all new in a lot of ways. And it's interesting because she's a baby gay. It's not the first time I've been with a baby gay, but I feel like it's quite appropriate that I'm with a baby gay in a lot of ways,
because you're both learning together.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, like, I feel like that's kind of perfect in a lot of ways, like, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm not going to get it right anyway all the time, and it's knowing that I'm new to my binary journey was important, very important for her to understand that then if I do get it wrong, to not think that it's something she's done wrong. It's that we're learning it as we go, kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a beautiful gift to each other, you know, that's a whole nother level of vulnerability. And And it does create some, you know, anxiety, you know, possibly insecurities about like, did I do this or am I supposed to do that? And, but the communication is why it's so key, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We're lucky. Exactly. And I think like that we're lucky in the sense that we're in a long distance relationship because we have to have established communication within our talking stage before we even became partners to, you know, in the just in the flirtation friendship stage, like that there had to be a clear definition of what was acceptable exchange or not. And as I said before, I always lay my flag to say I'm because of my mental illness, I need you to do X, Y, Z. But this is what I do in return is I will always answer your messages within a day because I make sure at the end of the day, I go through every app to make sure I haven't missed the message because I know what it's like to go to bed going, did I word that right? Like, cause maybe they're thinking about their response. Maybe they're just blanking me. Like, and I hate what with this partner, I hated the thought of her sat there in a time difference where she can't text me because I'm asleep. Yeah. In over something that all because I was careless in my communication. Nah, there's something I can do about that. So I go out of my way to make sure that I will say things like, I'm not ignoring you. I'm in a call for the next hour. So if I'm delayed in responding, that's why. That communication I learned in my last relationship works really well with LDR because if you acknowledge your partner, then they don't do that rumination. They don't sit there and make themselves crazy about stuff that they don't need to be.
I call it negotiations, but if you, you know, set down those boundaries or talk about some of those things, you know, that you're going to bring to the table. That's why it's so important whenever people come in and they're like, well, this is just how we do it. And I'm going, well, how you do it kind of got you here. And if you're questioning, you know, like where you even fit in this gender universe, you know, we're going to have to negotiate some. What if you go to bed one night and your penis isn't comfortable for you? Well, how is this partner going to know that? So we have to open up the dialogue. We have to negotiate like some space so that y'all can both have kind of the unknowns. Like if I say something like this, I'm not leaving it as that you did something wrong. If there's something that we need to talk about, I'm definitely going to remember to come back to it. Sometimes though, whenever there's nothing that you're just kind of having normal conversation. Yeah. That's whenever you sometimes forget to come back to it, you know? And so maybe negotiating some of those guidelines, you know, in the bedroom, in the conversation, you know.
You know, I said to her, I explained to her that it was all new for me and that I would be feeling my way through the dark and that she needed to know what she was getting into in a lot of ways, in the same respectful way that I suppose she would disclose that she was a baby gay, because I suppose in a way it gives us both a starting box to stay in. We don't have to stay in that box, but it's a starting point for us to start off from. And like, so I always knew that there would be we would have an ability to roll through things with that communication open, because apart from anything else, the woman's virtually clairvoyant. She can read me like a book. Like, I swear to God, I can't keep nothing from her. I can't keep secrets. It's ridiculous. And what it does mean is like there's we hold space for each other because we've evolved to this point in a short space of time, only a few months time, because of the distance, because there has to be a clarity of communication with digital. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have a long distance relationship, or if you're going to have a digital relationship or intimacy in a relationship with digital, you've got to have that clarity of communication. That gives you confidence with the LDR, because once you've got an app or you've got a way of getting in communication, when you've got long distance like this, where we're living in different time zones, literal different countries, we can't just text each other or phone each other. We've got to use something internet based. So WhatsApp is one that works best for us usually
for long distance relationships,
because it's free on the internet, you know, and like, you can video, you can send pictures, you can send, you know, so like, you know, like she was in the mountains last weekend and like was sending me these amazing pictures. They just look like oil paintings, like that I'd seen in books. Like, picturesque mountain pictures with all these beautiful trees and blue sky, like blue if anything. And it, like, and then there are little windows into this area of where she lives. Like, and I'm like, I can't wait to visit. But then the universe says, you can have this amazing person that's going to come along into your life and help you, even help you with your identity and your I don't know, birth of your new, of your real self. But firstly, they're going to live miles away. And secondly, we're going to have throw a pandemic in there, meaning you can't book flights.
Welcome to patience.
Danielson, patience and humility, being humble in the presence of patience, because when you wait in a space that you were out of control of, whether you're, it's because you're a child or whether it's because you're in a marriage you can't get out of or in a pandemic you have no control over, that is, that patience there is a patience that's on a knife edge, because it's, you have to do it. You have to be like, okay, like, I have no choice. What do? Scream at the moon? Like, what? I literally have no power.
Even if you screamed at the moon, you still don't have any power to change it.
What would that do? You know, so like, there's that was very humble. That's been very humbling for me.
Reminder that everything is not about us. Everything is not built so that you can get to an airport and you can get on a plane and go do what you need to do. It's the reminder, you know, and same for me in this journey of like becoming and understanding that this one piece of who I am as a gay woman is so minute and so huge simultaneously.
Yes. Yes. They can coexist.
They coexist.
The situation and the minute insignificance of it coexist. Yes.
And that is where I struggle to explain to people. Like, all at one time, exactly this one thing does not define my humanness, right? But society and the way that things are noted, my internalized stuff had to dig it up, find it, understand it, and then decide how I was going to incorporate it into the mom that likes to quilt, the grandma that likes to quilt, you know, the grandma that likes to do puzzles at 40 something, you know, whenever I was younger. Like, I wasn't like, I didn't have to go be the person that I thought I had to be the human that I am, who right. happens to be gay.
Exactly. They didn't define it one another. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, yeah. I went on a little tangent then. But
no, but it's relevant. It is relevant because it's all part of that same journey of really, and ultimately, but we always end up saying is we're not the finished article. Any of us, even on our deathbeds. And I think that that's a good thing, genuinely, because I don't feel like the world stays the same. Nothing ever. Now, I used to say a lot of time, and it's very, very characteristic of people with depression to say things like nothing stays the same, because it's said in a, but it's a glass half empty type of statement for me, because no, nothing does stay the same. And that's great. That's amazing. And that transformation was the transformation I made in my bipolar, is recognizing that instead of feeling panic and dismay and sadness over the fact that I couldn't control what mood I would be in the next day and therefore couldn't hold down a proper job because I wouldn't know who I was going to be the next day from day to day, I would embrace it to say that if today is a good day, that I'm enjoying who I am today and the mood level that I'm at, then just enjoy today and be in today. And then tomorrow, when tomorrow comes, and tomorrow maybe, but totally, you deal with tomorrow when tomorrow comes. And it's that kind of thing is like, that kind of thinking is all of that thinking came really forward. I'd learned it all before, but it came forward in lockdown and it all led to the same place. It all led to me opening the non-binary box for good. I'm never closing it again.
I'm so glad you're not. Because the human that you are, and I will never forget seeing you that day. I will never forget, like, that human is just pure awesomeness, pure gold, pure, you know, I don't know. I've come across a couple different people, and I do think that it's neat in the non-binary spectrum that, I don't want to say innocence. That's not the word that I'm looking for, but yet it is. I can't think of it any other way.
There's definitely a vulnerability about it because there's a raw honesty. It's raw honesty.
And because there's no rule book, you know, and everybody's judging. And so it's like, and I don't mean that like that it's right, because that not yours to own.
It's just a fact. It's a fact.
It's just a fact. And so, and questions and things like that. And so, you know, it is a very hard journey, and nobody chooses to do a journey that makes their life really more difficult, you know.
No, they don't. They don't. And that's
they choose it to make it more congruent.
Right. Like you wouldn't. You just wouldn't. I've already lived the lie. I've lived the lie for 30 years. And the lie was that I believed that this wasn't a valid existence. I believed that this was a freak of nature that had to be squashed into the box of butch lesbian. And it's not, because I'm not. No. So, and that's okay. And it's going to take a little while for it to settle after 30 years of being boxed away, you know.
I don't go in as much as I used to, because now they usually have them in-house, but I used to train school districts and their counselors and stuff, and that was one of the things that I requested that they take out. And they're like, well, I said, well, how do you line them up? And they're like, well, you know, boys here, girls there. And I'm like, and the rest? You know, so why can't you have astronauts and asteroids or something? Like, so we talked about like the possibilities, you know, why can't it be the third graders instead of right. Those boys
do it by age. Yeah. 10 years, 11 years. Yeah.
And so, you know, there's so many different ways, but people get stuck in that rigidity, you know, and even
because they feel like often the ones that get stuck in that rigidity often are the ones that believe that that's because the binary is unmovable. And it is the lighthouse at which everything else must be directed from. And
we're trying to make them stand, you know, in space that isn't really there, you know, and we're like, no, really, really, there's this space too. You can stand right here too. And you can accept that there are differences, you know.
But that's where worldview is important, and where worldview was an advantage in my household, in knowing about European cultures and about Asian cultures and Polynesian cultures, First Nations of various continents, was brought into my education by my family, not by my schooling, because I barely finished school. So I learned about these things from visiting some places, but also from my parents, by books and things that I was encouraged to watch as movies and things like that, to engage in conversation with them about cultures that had other expressions other than what we were seeing around us. So in that respect, in a way, those conversations, I remember being quite embarrassing for me, because I felt like everyone was looking at me, even in them situations. At that time, it was because I was still in the closet about being gay, so I piled all of that,
yeah,
kind of, that's like that layering, you know, yeah, that, yeah, and like thought that that's what it, but now when I look back, I'm like, actually, when we were talking about, you know, various androgynous type characters in mythology and things like that, or in ancient stories from, you know, New Zealand, Maori people, or the Aboriginals in Australia, which one of my family's got a relative in Australia, so it was like they've been out there a few times. So there was those stories that came on from them, those First Nations, you know, about there being a spectrum. So my, you know, like, so I was lucky. But then when I started visiting America and I started traveling around America, I was like, wow, there's so much work to do in the middle of America. There's like, well, first of all, some of them people need to visit the ocean so they can realize they're not living in the entire world in Missouri. Yeah, it's frightening, frightening for me, to be fair, a lot of the time, honestly. Yeah. Because I was terrified by stories that I'd heard about real life lynchings of trans people, which I qualify as being because I'm not what I'm born to in my body. And mm-hmm. that is basically what the trans means. You know, cis just means this side, trans means the other side. It's that simple. It's Latin. It doesn't mean anything else. Like, but we make it comfortable for people by putting it in these red and blue boxes or pink and blue boxes. Like, and that simplicity's made my life a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. That thing about that school line, that I've haunted by things like that because I felt like I stuck out like a big fat sore thumb. So everybody was laughing at me behind my back because I was in the wrong line. Because there's a boy in a skirt in the wrong line. Stole the show again.
I know. She's my baby. She's a brat. Well, okay, so, and I do those like key little twists in people's lives where they do realize, like, wait a minute, you know, I didn't fit, and this is, and the people that are supposed to be taking care of me didn't help me understand why, like, in exactly. that, you know what I mean? So we get that. We get that, like, you know, me, the therapist, I'm like, get that. But, and so now it's like, okay, wait a minute. Now I'm also alone in this journey because even the adults who I think are supposed to be helping guide me are not getting it and not providing me with something so that I can figure out how to voice it.
Right.
Which fragments, you know, that look towards these people for leadership and trust them and things. And it's, and then you're like, then you have some kids who are like,
it grinds against you, changes your reality. Yeah. It ruins it. You lose your innocence as a child because mm-hmm. the people that have provided you with literal food to keep you alive and shelter from you aren't guiding you in something that feels fundamentally important to your absolute existence. And yet,
yes.
No conversation. There's no tools you can reach out to, and talk to a parent about because they don't exist for people that don't exist. So, and I remember when I was young, very very young, like 10,
heard powerful.
A story about Victoria. You know, Queen Victoria. Mm-hmm. She was the one that passed the anti-homosexual homosexual sex illegal. But she never did it for lesbians because she didn't believe they existed. And I found that out when I was like 10 years old. And I was like, I don't even exist.
Wow.
I don't even exist.
Do you think that it's because, like, the stigma, you know, from one to the other, like, as far as, I mean, as to start a whole nother conversation, but penetration versus non-penetration. And so is it really, you know,
I think there's a definite sexual bias there. There's definitely a bias there.
I think so.
Of an assumption.
Yep.
From a patriarchal situation.
Yes.
Of mentality that is the only way to have sex. And that without that, it's not legitimate. And that is almost a microaggression kind of.
Yeah, no, I think it is.
Passes into your psyche. Mm-hmm. As a female who likes females, what you're doing isn't real sex. Is something that you like, whatever. You don't get the whatever bit until you're a bit older. So you're like, maybe like, I don't know, for me, it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s, late 20s before I was like, no, I'm sorry, but there's no other way. This is the only way. What you're doing, the way you do it, heterosexual people, is the wrong way. That's how you make babies. This is how you make love. Just saying.
Yeah. I tried to come out in the 80s and that was a bad call. Bad call. And so it did scare me a lot, you know, the whole situation and the hatred, you know, that it did. So my goal was to help people, you know, be healthy, happy, and, you know, joyous as far as much as possible. That was my goal. But my sexuality got very much suppressed, you know, and so until later. And then it comes out self-destructively, you know, because whenever you aren't allowed to be who you are, you know, then, and you know now who you are, right? Then it's like, okay, don't let me be who I am. All right, see how that worked out for you. You know?
Yeah, there is a certain amount of that, but then there's also a certain amount of looking back and going, how much of what I was doing in my behavior, in the things that I ended up doing that were self-destructive, were actually
100%, I believe.
The fact that I was being eaten up by something inside me.
Oh, no, 100%. I agree with that. I think self-destruction, and that's one of the things for me, I can't talk for everybody, but for me, I mean, we also have addiction in our family. And so my self-destruction was, you know, also connected to the ease of family lineage. So, but I could not figure out how to love myself, love my son, and live in a world that hated me all at the same time.
Right.
I could not do it. I could not figure out.
I'm not surprised. Just one of them's a heavy enough load. Three at a time. That's a big load.
And let me tell you, I loved my son like air. If he needed air, you know, I was not going to get it if that was the last straw, you know, and I just didn't know how to do all those simultaneously. And, you know, and later, whenever he was a little bit elder, I was like, that's whenever I kind of had my, you know, I needed to come out. I needed for people to see me and for me to be validated. And so I think that like, and so it just came out messy. It just came out messy.
Sometimes it's better just to say it. I say that all the time. It's like, I don't just start the conversation. You might end up over there, but like, just they say something, jump into it. Doesn't matter how it happens sometimes. Because not everybody's articulate. Not everybody knows how to express what they're feeling in their body or get to the point where you can open up what they're feeling in the body. Not everyone can do that. And I've learned to do it over the years, you know. But, it's coming out later is in a way is a lot in common with coming out as late as I have as non-binary, really, because I mean, there's practical things that don't match up, like, you know, changing my name. I've got to do legally. I've got to talk to the bank. I've got to talk to colleagues. I've got to talk to more family members, change all my social medias, change all my bank cards. It's all, you know, the deeds of my house, like everything's got to be changed. And it's all passport. For God's sake, can't change my name before I use my passport to get to my girlfriend. That's for sure.
That's one of the things that that I work with clients on too, because it's just so difficult to do all that. And so
I just forgot that all of that would happen. Like I was almost kind of, I guess I hadn't completely committed to it, if I'm honest. And I think I had, but I needed to recognize that I had, and that required different action. One of which, in front of my parents for the first time ever, I used my name Lee on the phone to somebody, to a contractor. And I felt the silence behind me. I heard the silence behind me, not out of, they just noticed. Like they weren't, there was no judgment in it. I didn't feel negative about it.
No, but you didn't say it like I'm stomping my feet and I'm telling you. You said in this, even in this realm with a contractor, I am seeing me. They are having to see me in this conversation. And so it's not like a stuffing it in their face, which
well,
is
it's
what
not
I
like
think,
a, it's not
I think
like
they
a
would
child
be,
demanding something
yes,
from a parent.
I think
at
that
all.
Would be easier for them to just go, like that. No, this is where you've literally moved to. Okay, I don't know what kind of journey you guys got to do. Hmm. But I have moved forward in my journey. Does that make sense?
Yes, because if you remember from what I was saying earlier about being relentless and about things happening, things that happen, so you have to be relentless with humility, with grace. You give your parents of their age, time as old dogs to learn this new trick. It's my job to become parental, like you wisely said, and come back, step back from, because this is my truth I've had for a long time. It's new news for them. And on the basis of that grace, they have a very long period of time ahead of them yet before I will start saying, right, you've had a year now.
So to finish up kind of that thought, like, I do think that it's all situational. Like, people come in sometimes and they're like, tell me exactly how it's going to happen, or what do you want me to do? And I'm like, I don't know. Tell me, let me get your genealogy, you know, your genogram.
Yeah, because you know what? I hesitated. Like, I did go, do it. And I said it. But it wasn't like long enough, but like it is literally, I never planned that. I never intended to do that, and actually was dreading having any conversation at all. And I just didn't want to, I'm tired of having to reiterate, honestly, because it is quite tiring to have to keep saying the same thing over with.
Well, and that's what most of them. Yeah, that's what most figure out. Like, kind of like I was saying, you know, like that it's one small piece of me being a gay woman, but yet.
Whoa. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm so much more than just my non-binary status, and like.
So it's finding that rhythm of where I will engage, you finding that rhythm of where you will engage, because you've decided that you're going to invest your time and energy into that. Yeah, and if you decide that you want to invest your time and energy into it, then it's no one else's business how you choose to handle that.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And and if you choose not to, then it's no one else's business how you choose to handle that.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, and that's really what it comes down to in the journey. You know what? Loss, you know, and grief, that's really what it comes down to, is that I think that if whenever family can't see you for who you are, and that's really what it is. It's not about gender, and it's not about sexuality. It's about, this is the human.
Yeah. Register all those things about human, please. Thank you. Yeah.
Yes.
You don't have to like it. Just register those things.
And I love, there's a Kinsey scale. Anyway, there's some of this gender stuff that I just love. And the information in it is really neat. I'll send it to you. And one of the things is like, acceptance is not what people on the gender plane or on the sexuality plane want. Nobody comes up to me and says, I'm heterosexual. Like, as if they're asking for acceptance, right? And so why should I have to say I'm gay and asking for acceptance? But yet we constantly are having to do that. And so that one's kind of one of those, I don't say acceptance. I don't want acceptance. You know, respect is fine. Or
yeah, like when I tell somebody that I've just met, like a contractor, I don't want to hear, well, how does that work then?
Yeah.
I've just told you more than you should have to, I should have to, by explaining that my name is different to the name I'm asking you to use because I'm recently come out as non-binary. Asking any more than that is out of order and centers you and your ignorance above my well-being, and I won't have it. And I let myself down in that situation, but I won't be doing that again. Because I let him have that moment. Because only put out of my naivety of not being in that situation many times before.
I was about
before.
To
not
say.
Practiced yet.
You had zero practice with that.
Exactly.
And so exactly. I don't think that
I'm not being hard on myself about it. It's just a thing that is a muscle memory thing. Like telling colleagues, like telling contractors on the phone, you know, and the reflex of, you know, starting to use it in shops and places where I don't actually need formal ID for. Although I did say on a loyalty card, Lee, and then showed her my card to do the transaction. And the woman went, like, she could see the cogs going, and then she was just, either she decided it's none of my business, I'm going to carry on serving this human being, or she realized she was talking to someone trans and just didn't want to draw attention to it. Either way, she dealt with it brilliantly because she stopped. And my niece noticed she stopped too, just long enough to think, do I need to say anything? No, it's not my business. Carry on with the transaction. And she did.
Good.
Because she knew that that loyalty card was associated with my card. It was mm-hmm. the correct address because it had come up on the address thing when I'd set the loyalty card up. So whether or not I was Lee or whoever it was, I was still saying the same surname. So, and actually one of my initials from my dead name is L. So I could well be losing one of my middle names for all she knew. Yeah. So, you know, whatever way it was incredibly validating, but it was a panic moment for me. Like,
it is, you know, a lot of my kids have those in classrooms. And so a lot of my kids have those in classrooms and they're very valid. And parents are like, I don't understand why they won't go to school. And I'm like, well, if you had somebody seven times, you know, at the beginning of every single class, call out their you know, unused name, then why?
So hard.
Yeah. And then also every time the question is asked or every time they have to get a grade or every time, I wouldn't want to use it either. So I used to make my kids a card that said, you know, my legal name is, my name is, and my pronouns are, and you know, and that anyway, it said that on there. And I signed it with my signature on there, but I always made them a card because I was just like, why do you need to have an argument with a substitute teacher or a teacher? And I don't want you panicking and then not going into the classroom.
Right.
So that's the goal. The goal is that you're supposed to be at school. So let's not torture you while you're in the room. You know, let's just do school, which is okay to do. You know, and lots of people argue with me here in Texas. So I know I'm not.
Listen, if people are arguing with you in Texas, you're probably doing the right thing.
I hate to tell you this, Lee, but I, as much as I want to keep talking, I think my dogs are going to have a fit if I don't go be present.
A long time.
And I haven't even said, thanks for joining us at Sex Gen.
You want to say that now or you want me to cut that in?
So I want you to know that I have appreciated thoroughly you being here, and for my own education, for my own journey and trying to make a secure place and space for people, you know, that are on the gender, in the gender universe. You know, in the sexuality universe, like for me to hear some of your story is very, okay, get on the right track with this, or, okay, yeah, you're going good, girl, you can do that, you know, and like me kind of going, this is what I need to learn. This is what I need to, don't need to learn. And so I appreciate you just having this open conversation with me.
That's my pleasure. I'm not an expert by any means on all things non-binary.
It's your journey. You are
very much a baby binary. So non-binary. So it is my unique experience, but there's a lot of crossover, I feel like. So I'm glad. Hopefully at least it'd be some things you didn't think about. Like that's the main objective.
Always.
Really also as well to put myself out there, because when I was, I didn't see nobody like me when I was young. So mm-hmm. I feel like it's my job now.
No, Yeah, I think that it is very much like a good space for people to decide when, you know, what they should be. Like I decide as a gay woman where I, you know, am, you know, and that doesn't mean that I hide anything about me. It just means, well, if I'm in an elevator and I sneeze, I just say, excuse me. I don't say, excuse me, I'm a lesbian.
Right. No, exactly. And that's why I've kept my original brand of, the one with the tools on Instagram. So the one with the tools is the original account that I had that used to be called One Girl and Her Tools. So that's recent rebranding. And then I'm also the Rainbow Carver on Instagram and on TikTok. So that both of them are completely me, Lee, now. So it's really great.
I'll put those below again also.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. If you ever want to come back.
And if anybody wants to go and like drop me a tip in buy me a coffee, they can go and buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com.
Oh my gosh, I got to include that one too. Yes.
Yeah, yes. And there's also should be a link in one of my bios somewhere to my fundraiser for my top surgery. So that's also a link worth plugging as well, my GoFundMe.
Yes. Yes. I need to go through and I need to get on, because I think I only listed two last time, but the top surgeries.
Well, email me when you send me the link and stuff and we can do that.
Okay. I will talk to you again soon, Lee, but
all right.
Everybody else, thank y'all so much for listening in or watching Sex Gen. We appreciate it. Have a good evening. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I hope it provided some information for you. Please remember that this is not a therapy session, nor is it meant to provide therapy for anyone. Although I am a therapist, this is just generating a conversation and starting to understand the dynamics of sex and intimacy. If you have any questions or you feel like you're overwhelmed and need assistance, please make sure to reach out to your therapist. Or if you have a life or death fear, please make sure to call 911. Thank you so much for joining us, and we see you next time on Sex Gen.